is Armand Jamil with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And today, a very special day, one of my favorite authors, Judith Orloff, who's a physician who is from the West Coast, is going to talk to us about one of the recent works that she did called The Ecstasy of Surrender. In the studio with me also, Kevin O'Donoghue. You probably all know Kevin by now. He is the prime student.
Yes, indeed. Thank you.
Prime student, right? And Kevin is also a specialist in working with people around this issue, but mainly this is an interview with Judith. And Judith, I would love to hear from you. Let's see what started you on this path.
Well, I wrote The Ecstasy of Surrender because surrender was something I wanted to learn to do the most in my life. I'm a physician, and I also work as an intuitive, so I combine traditional psychiatry with intuition. And I've always been sort of a control freak, and it's, you know, I tend to clench more than I would like and push more than I would like. And so I wanted to practice surrender as I've been writing the book to improve my own life, because I think it's the missing piece to health and wellness. I mean, I see so many of my patients who are stressed out and pushing, and they know how to try and make things happen, but they don't know how to tune into their intuition to allow for the surrendering part. And so I wanted to write about how surrender applies to success.
Judith, as a physician, therefore, it would make sense that people should surrender to death.
You want to write, go right for it.
Exactly, we do go right for it.
That's actually the last chapter of the book, is surrendering to death in the afterlife. But it's a fear of death permeates the whole medical system. And I firmly believe that if you could surrender your fear of dying and realize that the spirit lives on, that it will help you live your life
more. What if you're not sure that the spirit lives on?
Well, I have a meditation in the book taking people into the experience of death, and I would like them to practice it. I know it sort of scares people at first, but take it very slowly so they could know firsthand what it is to die. It's just a shift in mind awareness. It's not what people think it is.
This is without ketamine.
Without ketamine. No, this is just through meditation and through the psychedelic powers of one's own mind.
And one person can dip yourself to a place where you could feel the surrender, because it's holding on that seems to be creating all the tension.
Yes, it's the mind. It's the linear mind in our over-intellectualized culture. And certainly, you know, as a physician, I've seen the intellect destroy healthcare in that, you know, we've lost a sense of heart and intuition. We don't balance it. So surrender is important to heal, and, you know, whether you want to experience death, to surrender your fear. Could you imagine surrendering your fear of death, actually feel it, having that fear lifted, and then going back and living your life with that knowledge that you'll be okay?
Luckily for me, Judith, I've visited the place.
Yes. Yes, that's beautiful.
And so have you.
Yes, well, I have. At age 16, after a car accident of going over a cliff, I visited that tunnel. But people, I wanted people to, you know, I call it the final surrender. You know, we're talking about it. I kind of, in the book, I work people up to that, because it's kind of an intense place, you know, to talk about death. But I believe that it's the final surrender, and we're all going to have to do it. But the book is about surrendering in life, mainly, and how surrender can help you in all aspects of life, including intimacy, including success. You know, how can it help you in arguments with your spouse? How can it help you attract a soulmate?
Well, let's work backwards. I think we're doing something unique, because I know you've done Oprah and done everybody else, but I'm sure they don't go in this direction. Let's work backwards. Let's see this. If you are at peace with death itself, the word death would make people turn off the airwaves, turn off the radio right away. But I don't scare people, and you don't scare people. So let's say if you're comfortable with the finality of things, then you're comfortable with everything. Now, for example, an intense relationship where you're struggling to hold on to a lover who either shows you or doesn't show you how much they care for you, and you're fighting to try to get this attachment. If you don't have the fear of death, that attachment is not as strong. It's not as compelling. and it's not as enslaving.
That is very, very true. And when you let go of fear of being alone or fear of never finding somebody, you know, it's surrendering on many, many levels. The fear of death is basic, huge, and primordial.
Surrender and aloneness. Put those two words together for me.
Yeah, so some people are desperately afraid of being alone, and they're desperately afraid of not finding a soulmate, or if they stay with a partner, you know, out of fear of being alone or of never finding somebody. And, you know, the big principle of the book is to surrender fear and to have more faith than that in order for what's great for you. You know, as I wrote the book, I surrendered my attachment to unavailable men, and I have a section on that where I've pretty much successfully healed that in myself, and that's a pattern that was tormenting me, you know, for many, many years. And I've surrendered it using the techniques in this book, and as I work them, I read this book to remind myself of, you know, when I need to surrender, because you don't always surrender. You know, I always take it back, or I get too rushed or overwrought, and I take it back. But one thing I really wanted to surrender was, you know, unhealthy relationships. You know, how do you do that?
Well, what's the difference between unhealthy and healthy, since they're almost all meaningless? Because it's all about you with you.
It is. It's about you with you. And, you know, it's all mirrors. You know, the other person is a mirror for you. But it's a spiritual journey where if you're in a relationship, then you can, you know, use the other person as a mirror and hopefully grow. But the intimacy can be very powerful because, you know, it's something that's very sustaining and nurturing. If people want it, you know, if they want that type of relationship as opposed to just a toxic relationship. And I feel it's important to surrender energy vampires and toxic relationships, and I spend time in the book on that, just simply because life becomes so much better without them.
We're going to go to that in a moment. We want people to know we're speaking with Judith Orloff, Dr. Judith Orloff, who wrote The Ecstasy of Surrender. And as you can notice, my friends, we're talking at a level that most people don't have the courage to talk at. I mean, Judith is a brave, exploring soul, and has challenged herself and done a lot of work on herself. So I love and respect the work that she does. In the studio with me also, Kevin O'Donoghue, who is as well fascinated and works with this issue himself as a therapist. Kevin, any comments at this point, or you want to hold on till we...
Yeah, I'll hold on. It's fascinating so far. You went right for the death theme. So
go right for the soul of it. Judith, back to you for a question now. The emotions. People, you know, if you break it down and people have these feelings, they call feelings, they feel sad, mad, glad, bad, angry, scared, all these feelings. What do you say you do with those? What do you do with those emotions? Do you try them on? What do you do?
Well, I think you're authentically yourself. You don't squash them, because then they just go underneath and they cause all sorts of anxiety and depression. You want to work with them as a spiritual path. You want to, you know, deal with your fear, but you also want to overcome your fear and surrender as much fear as you can in this lifetime.
How do you do that? If you have fear, your amygdala is going nuts, right? Your nerves are going crazy. You're feeling yourself filled with tremors. You say to yourself, don't be scared. If you're a frightened person, you're scared.
It's not so much don't be scared. Fear is a choice. I could be afraid, let's say I'll never find a soulmate, or I could reprogram my mind and say the perfect person is coming at the perfect time and to have faith and trust.
Well, wait a minute. Fear's not a choice. Look at Woody Allen.
So it is, though. He's made a choice to live a fear-driven life because it helps his comedy.
Okay, but you don't think that's the way he is, and there aren't personalities like that? There are not personalities who are just scared people?
He's into that, neurotic, fearful persona, and he's not giving it up. It's working for him. But he doesn't have to be that way if he doesn't want to. But
that's pretty amazing that you're saying that, because I believe you're saying you don't think there's any illness. You're saying you don't think neurosis exists.
Oh, no, I think it does, but I think we have a choice when we could get a mindful awareness going. And, you know, for instance, you know, the section on energy vampires I have in the book.
Yes, and we'll talk about that now. Good.
Yes, you know, are we an energy? Can we be an energy vampire? And the answer is, of course, yes. We can become whiny. We can become complaining. or negative, but we have a choice to change that pattern. And that's where the surrender comes in, that you're willing and wanting to surrender that pattern. You just get hooked in it unconsciously, but once somebody brings it to your awareness, you can make the necessary changes to shift. I have ultimate faith in human nature. I'm one of those people. And if you want to become awake and aware, and if somebody points out, you know, honey, you're complaining a lot, instead of defending, you could say, hey, I am. Let me change that. So I believe we have a lot of choices. And when we're stuck in old patterns, psychotherapy is so useful to help unstick us.
What is an energy vampire?
An energy vampire is somebody who sucks you dry. And it could be a person, it could be a coworker, it could be your spouse, it could be your children, it could be a friend, it could be a hairdresser. But in the end of the day, you feel spent, your eyelids are droopy, you feel like you're drained or like taking a nap, or you feel sick and toxic.
What would make people attracted to energy vampires?
Oh, they can be very charming. I have a different section in the book. Like a narcissist is an energy vampire, and a narcissist can be extremely charming and funny and sexy and so forth, but they just lack empathy, so they don't care about your feelings and are incapable of unconditional love. So, you know, there's always a plus side to a vampire. If they were just evil and draining, you know, you wouldn't really be attracted to them.
Actually, if they could pull the energy out of you, it's probably dormant sometime somewhere inside you, and you get a chance to feel it.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, there's also surrendering energy vampires is so important, particularly if you're ill or you're in pain. You can't afford to have these toxic people around you. It'll just make you sicker. So I feel pretty strongly about that part of surrender is letting go of the toxic relationships in your life, and how to do that by setting clear limits and boundaries, by realizing that no is a complete sentence, you know, by saying even to your parents, you know, I have to take a break from you now, you know, if it's necessary, you know, being really fierce about self-care, because you have to. I mean, I'm what you call an empath. I sense energy and emotions, but I also absorb it into my body, which can really exhaust me. And so I've really had to learn the energy management techniques that I talk about in the book so that I can maintain my sensitivity, yet at the same time not be a doormat for people and have them drain me.
One of the things, I went to the Mayo Clinic for a training once, and in their training for migraine headaches, One of the things they taught was that to surrender the idea of the headache.
Yes.
The idea of the migraine. They said you do not refer to it. You don't talk about it. You don't medicate it. You don't hold your head. And by letting go of the thing itself, they were able to reduce the significance or the intensity of the pain significantly. I mean, I saw a group of 20 people who were dancing by the time they left the program. And
that's
it was a beautiful
example of surrender.
It was mainly that they had to give up complaining about it, about talking about it. In fact, they weren't even allowed to refer to it. And it was a tremendous experience, tremendous to see.
You bring up a powerful point because, you know, part of what I'm talking about in the book is surrendering the negative stories we tell ourselves about things. You know, let it be, may it be, migraine headaches or relationships or illness or success. Once you can surrender the stories, you know, as these people did with the migraine, amazing things can happen. We just get stuck in a groove that's negative, and we need to surrender that, and then all kinds of things can happen in terms of healing.
Beautiful. We're speaking with Judith Orloff, Dr. Judith Orloff, the name of the book, The Ecstasy of Surrender. About the different ways and the different limits you could go to. Well, Judith, if you give up on guys who are not available, and then you give up on energy vampires, it sounds like what you got left is some boring folks.
Oh, the exact opposite. What you've got left is, like, what I have in my life now is a man who's actually there for me and who digs me and wants to be with me and is there through the ups and downs of life and, you know, is passionate and present. That's not boring. That's like the best.
But he's not pulling on you, and he's not narcissistic, and he's not available.
Exactly.
So you must have become more available.
I did.
See, the difference is not he became, you picked a more available guy, you became more available.
Exactly, by surrendering my patterns. That's exactly the point. I was the one who was creating the unavailable men, and I got, honestly, I got so sick and tired of being in therapy talking about it, I took another direction with it, you know, to try and heal it, which was much, you know, better at working. So, yes, I was determined. It was causing me too much pain. I wanted to surrender the pain. And so, you know, if anyone is stuck in that pattern of unavailable men, it's very important that you identify that and begin to work with, you know, what you need to surrender in terms of old ideas or old patterns so you can bring something else in. And I'm not into boring. I'm not. That is not what I'm after. You know, I'm into, like, passion and letting go of these toxic patterns that drain you only brings you more passion and aliveness.
What about, let's take the issue just to cross over into this thing about the financial issues that you mentioned. You talk about money and you talk about how people's wealth, and could you address how the issue of surrender has to deal with financial well-being?
Yes, well, surrendering fear when it comes to finances is huge. I mean, we're going through an extremely difficult time economically, and there are many very real fears that people are experiencing. And I understand that. However, not focusing on the fears and surrendering the fears as much as possible by looking at solution-oriented approaches in the moment that could help even a little bit is a lot more productive. Because what I've seen with my patients is they hold on to the fear and they toss and turn at night and they have insomnia and then they beat themselves up with the fear. The Buddhists talk about two arrows. The first arrow is what actually happens in life, such as the bad economy. And the second arrow is what we do to ourselves over that issue in terms of how we beat ourselves up. So you don't want to use the second arrow. You don't want to aggravate the situation by what you do in your head about it. And that's why it's important to surrender fear by bringing yourself to the very moment. And as hard as it is, look at what you have to be grateful for in your life and focus on that. Especially health. Health is number one. If you have your health, then you have the luxury of dealing with all these issues with energy. If you don't have your health, it's a whole different story.
Okay, well, what about the story if you don't have your health? I know enough people out there who don't.
If you don't have your health,
number
one... You've
got somebody with a terminal illness.
Oh,
or just not even terminal. How about a bad illness? How about COPD? How about stuff like that? How about bad hearts, arrhythmias, stuff like that? Let's say a person is not.
Yes. Well, there's a chapter in the book on surrendering, you know, during the process of pain and illness. And what I mean by that is not giving in. I'm not meaning giving in to pain and illness. But there's a rule, a physical rule, that what you resist persists. So if you clench around pain, let's say you have fibromyalgia or you have some kind of back pain, the more you clench around it, the worse it's going to get because you're aggravating the pain in the nerve receptors. So as much as you can relax with the illness and the pain, the less pain and discomfort you'll have. It seems kind of counterintuitive, but it works. And also the negative stories that you tell yourself about the illness can aggravate your symptoms. You know, if you look at illness as a path to spiritual awakening, which I do, and it's a very rigorous path, and it really asks a lot of you. And always ask how this experience of illness can help me to grow stronger and more heart-centered and more loving and treat myself with compassion each day. That's such an important lesson of illness. And to accept limitations, if you have them, for the time being, and not push and not stress. But instead, meditate, read, do something slowly where it doesn't require a lot of movement if you don't have mobility. So it's about an attitude, a surrendered attitude, rather than beating yourself up. And people think they do something wrong if they get ill, and it's not so.
Wait. People think they do something wrong if they get ill?
If they've caused it in some way, or they're not spiritually evolved enough. That's such nonsense as far as I'm concerned as a physician. I don't believe that at all, that each person is given, you know, the life experiences they need in their lives to grow. And if you could look at it that way instead of looking at illness as a punishment, it's very difficult because of the discomfort level.
Well, that's a very interesting point. The point about the punishment of illness, almost as if you're saying there's a concept that if you're sick and if you've gotten sick or something's happened to you, you're being punished for some part of you that is not acceptable, probably to your perception of what your parents would have thought of you.
Exactly.
And so if you feel that you're guilty or you feel some kind of shame regarding your parents, you're likely to call on an illness and justify it by saying, I deserve this.
Yes. And then you beat yourself up, and that increases the cortisol and adrenaline, the stress hormones, which decreases immunity, which makes the illness worse.
Judy Orloff. It's good thinking, you know. You know, it's kind of unusual to hear somebody think it at that level of depth. But now when you talk about emotions and you talk about letting go of negative emotions, right? Kevin was asking me a little earlier a question about that. Kevin, go ahead.
Yeah, Armand, I was wondering, Judy, do some of your clients, do people think that there's something to learn by holding on? I mean, why don't people just naturally give it up in the first place?
Not human nature.
Right, right.
Human nature to cling to things and to torment yourself. No, what I'm talking about requires a little bit more awareness than that and just some education. You know, people just do it by habit. You know, their parents usually weren't great role models. Their teachers weren't great role models for this. So, you know, people, when it comes to emotions, have to kind of invent it for themselves unless they have, you know, an expert therapist or an expert role model, which most of us don't have. And so they just, you know, in therapy and in my books, I just train people what to do. And then they have the aha. It's not that complicated, really. It's just a different way of thinking about it.
Give us an example of what you would do with your book with the experience of an emotion.
Well, for instance, you know, as I said before, I'm an empath and I tend to absorb other people's stress and symptoms into my body. So I write about a phenomenon called empathic illnesses, where for those people out there who are empaths and very sensitive, you know, what you can do is absorb other people's stress and symptoms into your body and emotions without even realizing it. Where you're a sponge and you're actually taking on the emotions of others, your parents, your coworkers. You could walk into work feeling fine and walk out a wreck because your coworker is having an anxiety attack. You see, so with emotions, they're more than what you think. You can actually absorb them into your body. They're contagious. There's the mirror neurons in the brain, which are the compassion centers, which allow us to feel compassion for those we care about. But an adjunct to that is that you take on the energy of others via compassion.
So you're not so lucky to be an empath.
Oh, I am. I'm so blessed to be an empath. However, the reason I'm bringing it up is that I have developed strategies to deal with it so I don't absorb other people's energy. And the flip side is that I can be intuitive and passionate and tune into things and feel. I want to feel in my human body, you know, with all my receptors. I want to be open and feel. I don't want to be numb. And empathy, and as a physician, it allows me to sense what other people are feeling so I can help them. But the trick is, what I talk about in the book, how not to absorb other people's stuff. Feeling it is one thing. Taking it into your own body is another thing. And a lot of people with fibromyalgia or chronic fatigue are often empaths, and they don't realize how much they're taking on from the world, even the world situation, or other people's bodies. So that's why, you know, in this book, I wanted to offer people tools how not to do that, but yet still stay open.
And a primary way, well, the other question you had, Kevin, was about holding the emotions. Sometimes, Judith, the question he had asked was sometimes you have a feeling and you could get rid of that feeling right away. You could drop it, like jealousy.
Yeah.
You could say, oh, I'm being jealous. I'm not going to do that. Or you could give it air, and by giving it air, you let yourself expand and feel it more fully, I think allows you to diffuse it even better if you don't give it too much cement. Does this make any sense?
Yes, it does, except when it comes to fear. because you don't want to indulge fear. You want to acknowledge it, but you don't want to indulge it because it tends to be a virus of the mind, and it will just keep spreading and infiltrate everything, and you want to put a stop to fear.
Well, wait, if it does, what happens? Now, let me give you an example. I've worked with myself. Kevin, I know you've worked with yourself. Where we take fear on, right?
Yeah.
What's it like?
Well, my experience is I tremble even more and more, and I want to look at it. I mean, I try to see the depth of the fear as far as I can see it.
And it takes you to a point, almost a point of annihilation, yeah. Where you're going out to the edges.
Right.
Right? Feeling this. So one of the techniques we use, Judith, and I'm sure you must have seen this, you start with the words, I'm afraid. And you just start, I'm afraid, I'm afraid, I'm afraid, I'm afraid. And you can feel yourself regressing as you say these words. And then, like Kevin says, your body starts to tremble. You become more and more frightened, more and more frightened. Every part of your body is sending out a fear signal saying, I'm going to die at any moment now. You take it all the way out to the point of terror. And then it breaks. And you calm.
Yes, hopefully.
Always.
Always. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Well, as long as it breaks.
But that's where you need somebody with you. See, that's where you don't. You may not want to do that on your own.
Right.
You may not want to do it on the subway.
Right. Exactly. Yes, but what you're talking about is mindfully dealing with fear. Unfortunately, with most people, that they're so clenched into fear, it's just a habit and they don't think about it.
That's a very good point. So mindfully dealing with fear is to take fear and to visit it so that it doesn't own you. It's like all the other surrenders. You surrender with fear. You surrender with almost everything. You let it go. You let yourself take it on. Now, some people will just surrender by letting it go. Other people will travel through it. Because
yes, and fear, but it keeps repeating itself, so it's the same old
thing. Not if you take it to the edges.
Yeah, okay, I hear you.
Yeah. Now, let's talk about love. Love is another thing that sometimes people take and they condense rather than let it go. Do you think that love is another thing that has to be surrendered?
I think it's important to surrender to love.
And I see now we're giving surrender to rather than surrender to love itself.
Yes, exactly. Well, the way I'm describing surrender in the book is that you have to learn what to surrender to and what to not surrender to. So, like, you don't surrender to fear, but you do surrender to love. And ironically, this can be even harder, to surrender to love and pleasure, you know, to really let yourself go with it without holding yourself back. And there's so many subtle ways you can try and over-control and hold yourself back and stay in your head so that you don't surrender fully to your lover or to the moment. I mean, surrender is so much about how you are in this moment. Are you surrendered? Are you relaxed? Are you looking out? Are you feeling life? Are you glad you're alive? Are you grateful? Are you feeling it? And bam, the moment's gone. And then you have the next one. So it's surrendering moment by moment. It's not waiting until you surrender, but it's trying to surrender to loving yourself. And if you're fortunate enough to have a partner who's able to be loving, let yourself go to them. Don't hold yourself back. And you know, there's a section in the book on how to surrender barriers to love.
Now, Judith, I got to take one short break. We have to do a station identification. We'll be right back. Would you please stand by? You're going to hear noises, but just stay with us, okay?
Okay.
You are listening to The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille on WBAI.
99.5 FM in New York City. I hear music, mighty fine music. The murmur of a morning breeze up there, the rattle of the milkman on the stair. Sure, that's music, mighty fine. The singing of a sparrow in the sky, the perking of the coffee right nearby. There's my favorite melody. You, my angel, phoning me. strong. I get me out of bed and sing this song.
And this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI. My guest in the by phone, Judith Orloff. Dr. Judith Orloff, old friend, who has traveled some of the same paths. And we're talking about the ecstasy of surrender. Judith?
Hello, yes.
There you are, good. Good. Okay, so you began talking about this idea of surrender to love.
Yes.
Okay, now, one of the things I would like to do is to put in quotes the words, to love, and then surrender that. Because part of what people need to do is give up the need to love in order to surrender to love.
Yes, any attachment to it, absolutely.
So we've got two funny things going on here. One is you surrender so that you could feel love, but one of the things you have to surrender is the need for love.
That's right. It's ironic, isn't it?
How does it work?
Well, you know, if ideally you want to surrender your attachment to anything in terms of your, quote, need for love and just accept the flow of love when it comes into your life and as you manifest it. Because love isn't just personal love. It's what you can get through the heart. You know, any act of giving, you know, any act of selfless service can open up the heart. So it's really a connection to the heart that you have to yourself, first and foremost. So
but one of the things I love about having someone with the experience and knowledge that you have is that you might be able to give me an adequate description of what that word means, love. What is it?
Yes, it's an opening of the heart. It's a dedication to, you know, a sense of kind of divinity and goodness and altruism. And experience of gratitude and appreciation, all of that, it's like, you know, there's personal love where you love your dog or you love your spouse or you love your work, and then there's the more of a divine love where you, you know, feel a love of spirit in a greater sense, which ultimately is, you know, very, very important.
So what is it? Is it a feeling?
It's a
state of being
in your heart. It's in your, the heart chakra is in the center of the chest, and it's called the little sun in Taoism, and it's the center of healing energy. The heart is the healing energy. When I work with energy healing, I activate the heart chakra in people so the love can pour through their bodies and help them to heal, and it's energy that you have in your body that can connect with the world, really. It's not only personal, it's, you know, the universe and the world and spirit, and you want to develop that in yourself. It's being a good person, You know, love is being a good person. I'm a big believer in being just a good person is the essence of spirituality.
So I'm sorry to nail you to it. So a definition of love, if we had to put it in two sentences, is love is a what?
Love is the heart.
But love is the heart or love is a condition?
The power of the heart.
Love is the power of the heart. Okay. And so when you surrender to love, you're saying you have to surrender to allow the power of the heart to manifest. And by the power of the heart, you mean the power of the open being, the open self, undefended.
Absolutely. And the poet Rumi, I love a quote by him. He says, do not search for love. Search, you know, look to remove the barriers to love.
Good old Rumi.
Yeah.
He's very expansive.
Yes, yes.
That's why they called him Rumi.
Yes. And I look, you know, I have a chapter on honoring soulmates. And, you know, I think intimate relationships bestow remarkable gifts are compelling teachers of surrender because they keep challenging you to open your heart, to become a gutsier, more confident, and more giving person. And the impulse of intimacy is to transform us, is to melt our fears and inflexibilities. And so it wants us to flow like water and be sensual and joyous and free. And see, that's what intimacy in the highest sense can help you do as you surrender your fear.
Hey, I noticed that Kenneth has got to be leaving us. There you go, Kevin.
Yeah, thanks, Omar. And Judy, so nice to hear your voice and hear your message. It's
lovely to feel your presence.
And he gets the book next.
Kevin O'Donoghue, I'll see you there.
Okay.
Thanks, bye-bye.
All right. People like that around, you know, it's nice to work with people like him, people like you. Let's talk about nature. Now, isn't nature a place where there are trees?
Ideally.
I come from New York.
You have beautiful parks. You have the most beautiful parks, and Central Park is such a tribute to nature. It's so incredible.
What does it have to do with this whole... I mean, it almost seems like it's impossible to love, to surrender without nature.
I agree wholeheartedly. There's a chapter in the book on surrendering to the natural world, and I divided it into earth, water, air, and fire, and the different elements.
Would you go through that with us? Because I think that's a value. That's a special part of the book.
Oh, thank you. It's actually my most favorite chapter. And I was on the Weather Channel recently talking about the power of weather on emotions.
Good. So go with each one, would you please?
Yes. Earth is our connection to the earth, the magic of green growing things, of putting yourself in your garden, appreciating the flowers, feeling the rejuvenative energy of nature, and being earthbound, not just in your head. You want to meditate in the forest, or you want to go in the park, walk in the park, you know, on your lunch break, so you could connect with the beauty of nature, and the earth grounds you. The earth is very healing. So you want to connect with the earth and not forget about it. And then air is so powerful because I tell all my patients and readers, just look up once. Don't keep looking ahead or down. Look up and see what's above us. You know, we're part of this incredible universe on earth. We're on this little planet. Now, if you look up, you'll get a sense of awe and wonder for the enormous mystery of it all. You know, people just look at each other and look down, and they fail to just look up. So if you look up, it will be a reminder of the great space that's out there and the beautiful air. And there are visualizations with regard to air that I give to people, whereas if you're having a problem and it's very small and you're getting very uptight, give it some room, visualize it in a big, big space filled with air so that you can rise above the problem and look down and see what it is. You know, use air as a adjunct to get ahead, as a prompt to see larger than the problem. Now, and also I have a section on cloud interpretation. I'm so in love with clouds, I can't tell you. And sometimes, you know, they're like Rorschach tests where I ask my patients to look at clouds and tell me what you see. So there's a whole art of cloud interpretation when it comes to air, which is just, you know, so beautiful. You can use natural elements you know, for your own psychology and to learn about yourself. And then fire, you know, which you have to ignite the fire within, your sensuality, your connection to the earth, your passions, you know, all of that is fire. And I have exercises in the book to awaken your kundalini energy, which is located at the base of the spine. So that energy of fire is moving, the dragon energy is moving up your spine so that you can be alive and not numb and not shut off. So it's important to be fiery. And then water, you know, which is my element. I thrive by water. And so be fluid, be flowing. You could learn about surrender from water. You know, be flowing like the river. The river doesn't combat rocks when they meet an obstacle. It flows around rocks. So nature can teach us how to solve our problems if we just observe it. And I think people are so disconnected from nature, most of them, and there's so many answers and just healing energy and healing spirits. You know, the native people and the shamanic believers, you know, feel there's spirits in the plants and spirits in the forest, spirits in Central Park and, you know, in the bushes and the grass. And if you could just open to the whimsical nature of all this, it could just add another level of reality to your life that's, you know, other than sitting in an office cubicle or worrying about the variety of problems you and we all have. So it's a way to get out of yourself and surrender, you know, to the earth and what's, you know, all around us. I can't survive without being in nature. I spend a lot of time hiking in the hills and going out in nature and hiking in national parks and being by the ocean. I need nature. Otherwise, I feel I get jittery without it.
Is your ocean the West Coast Ocean or the East Coast Ocean?
I'll go to any ocean. I live on the West Coast. I live in the Venice Canals, which is 2 blocks from the ocean. So I walk to the ocean during storms, you know, during summer, during wind. I just love the moods of nature. It alivens me. It makes me feel, you know, so good. And rain, you know, the rain, how the cleansing aspects of rain. So what I'm suggesting in terms of surrendering in the book is to kind of go back to what the native traditions, you know, the honoring of nature more. We've forgotten that our bodies are, you know, an extension of nature. Nature isn't separate from us.
And there's been an unusual observation that I've had here, and a lot of other people have noticed, is that there's a new kind of nature. One that seems to be more invasive, and it especially took the form of cold here on the East Coast.
Yeah.
Not something that is familiar, not the kind of cold that goes inside and says to you, okay, it's a little cold, and we're going to now take care of yourself. That seems to be one that's more penetrating and invasive. Are you aware of this? Have you heard about this?
Absolutely.
Tell me about that.
There's a whole new quality to nature that's happening because of the global warming. And
you think it's directly related to global warming and the effect of it on people, and how might they be able to deal with this? Because one of the things that haven't been said, Judith, and I think you could say, is how to deal with using the ecstasy of surrender with global warming and its effects on people who are feeling it everywhere.
So
what do you think? Talk to me about it.
Absolutely. But number one, it's real. Number one, there are changes in the weather. And there's changes in the quality of the cold and the heat and the wind. Yes, everybody is perceiving that accurately. But, of course, the best thing to do is your own plot of nature, you know, really nurture that and create, you know, really a positive natural, you know, experience. If you can plant flowers, you know, if you can take care of the earth and water and eat well and support the earth. But in terms of taking care of your own bodies, you must realize there is a change and take extra precautions. You know, if it's exceedingly cold in New York City, you know, and a weird cold, not the, you know, the kind of cold you were describing, the cozy cold, it's a weird freezing cold.
That's right. It's a weird cold.
Yeah, it is. It is because there's something off with our natural world.
So some piece of us has to, in order to get in harmony with this even invasive cold, rather than resist it and fight it, which could set up the illness itself, we have to find a way to open ourselves to embrace it and then release it.
Yes, exactly, rather than fight it, because the opposite of surrender is becoming rigid, clenching, forcing, and growing smaller. You actually condense. Surrender means, as you're saying, getting larger, not resisting, and letting it flow through you. You know, that's the Buddhist concept of enlightenment.
And this is what seems to be necessary at this time. Because as we're saying, as I hear from so many different people in their perceptions, things aren't right. You know, it's not right. It feels wrong.
It feels wrong.
And according to what you're saying, Judith Orloff is saying that this experience should be noticed, not just passed by, and don't try to hold off against it. Don't try to just push the ocean backwards, because it's coming to get you. It's getting you. It invades. It feels it. I mean, it's like it's the strangest thing. Almost everybody I know is always worried about the weather nowadays.
Yeah, absolutely. It was something to worry about.
But it wasn't something we talked about. When I was younger, the weather was weather.
Right, exactly, because it was more in balance. But now it's out of balance, and anyone with an iota of intuition can feel that.
And being out of balance with your environment, according to your books, is the earth, wind, and fire are so important. And water, but being out of balance with nature, having nature be out of balance with us, gives us a significant challenge.
It is, but put yourself in environments of healthy nature, too, so you can get replenished. I mean, I just went hiking in Bandelier National Park outside of Santa Fe, and it's not damaged. It's still in very much intact and very powerful and beautiful. So if you can travel to natural settings or... You know, I was in Big Sur, and we hiked to a waterfall that was just the most beautiful waterfall, but that's replenishing to the spirit. So I always encourage anyone who can get out in nature, even, you know, up in Woodstock. I was up in Woodstock. The Catterskill Falls is the most amazing waterfall I've ever seen in my life. Mm. Everybody, you know, in the city can go up and go hiking there and get recentered when it comes to nature. It's not weird energy up there. It's really beautiful and fulfilling. So you could spend time there. You know, and get your spirit filled. Then you can go back in the city and deal with all the stresses there, you know, or whatever you have to deal with, you know, with the excitement of the city, but also the necessary stresses that are there. But go out in nature. Make that be part of your surrender practice. You know, just, I know it's hard to take the time, but it's probably the most worthwhile time you're going to take. You know, just get away from it all. Say no. Certain things, you know, all your emails and your computer, whatever, you know, demands we all have. And just take a trip. Go up to the, you know, upstate and just revel in the nature for a while and see if your body doesn't feel better.
It's an interesting thought. I'm wondering if there's a way of, do you think the use of all of these devices in some way has affected our the way that we surrender? Do you think that our surrender is kind of limited by the use of devices, or do you think it's helped by the devices?
No. I think like the iPhones and all the texting, it totally constricts you because you're focusing your attention on the devices and they're so addictive that it makes you, you know, feel more like you're in control. You know, you get instant gratification. You're not surrendering at all. It's keeping your attention from looking at the sky and looking at the person in front of you at the restaurant instead of checking all the time. No, I think the devices have caused us to become over-controlling and unsurrendered. I really do. I'm not, you know, I know the advantages of the devices, but I also know the dark side of them. And you have to not look at them for a while. You have to turn them off, and that's so hard. I mean, I live in L.A., and people, you go into a restaurant, everybody's on their cell phone. They're like zombies, you know, zombies looking down. And we can't allow that to happen. That's not a surrendered state. You know, all the zombies looking at their iPhones and their devices. And we have to go out in nature, turn off your phone, look at a waterfall, surrender to that and see if you don't feel better. I mean, I think the devices are making people sick. I really do. It makes them tense and taut and too quick and not relaxed and not and too rushed and, you know, always checking so they can't be in the moment. So there you go. There's my rant about the devices.
I got you right into that one.
Yeah.
Walk right in. That's, it's absolutely there, and there you have devices. There must be an app for freedom.
Yeah, there's got to be an app to surrender the devices and go off and lead your life and be in the moment.
There must be one app which helps you destroy all your devices.
Absolutely.
You know, you press a button and everything dissolves. We will now terminate all of your devices for the next 12 hours.
And then you can surrender to your life and your moment, the moment, and your family and your friends, and you can laugh like a full laugh without checking. you know, the checking is obsessive compulsive disorder, and it has brought it out in all of us who has any tendency to be, you know, OCD. You know, just that checking and addictive, it has an incredibly addictive quality to it. And so it makes us less surrendered. So if you're just aware of that, you know, so you check less, you turn it off for a while, you have mini technology fasts, that's what I suggest in the book, is to just, you know, spend some time in nature, you know, get a life, you know, be where the energy is high. You want the juicy, vibrant energy. And there's also, I want to say, a chapter on sexual power, on how to connect with your sexual power, and that means surrendering to it. And everybody has, you know, sexuality and sensuality. Even if you don't have a partner, there's a way of awakening that luscious energy in your body, and it's not by checking your iPhone.
Well, maybe an app.
Maybe an app. I'm sure, yeah, there are lots of apps on sexual power, but sexual, I have a chapter on the divinity of the body. As I feel, you know, many of my patients, and, you know, it's just very common in the West to loathe your body and to compare, you know, your body and whatever wrinkles or sags you have with other people. And the self-loathing stops healing, and it stops enjoyment of life. And so I spend a good deal of time talking about the energetic body and the beautiful light that penetrates the body and goes beyond it, so that you could begin to see the body as a light body as well as a physical body, and how that affects aging, so you can surrender your fear of aging. I mean, the fear of aging permeates our culture. It's making us sick, you know, and there's nothing really to be afraid of, you know. So I go through physical, emotional, and spiritual aspects of aging that are very important to look at. I hope I've kind of presented aging in a more surrendered sense. So I think our society has it all wrong. They failed, you know, and it's very backward when it comes to looking at aging and the messages they send through the media and the magazines. It's just crazy. It has nothing to do with the power of maturation and of beauty and spirituality and, you know, dealing with changes of the body, you know. So I really, the aging chapter, surrendering to aging, is one of my favorite ones.
One of the questions I had in there is, now there's a difference in aging, and there's been a shift between people mixing aging, where it used to be older men, younger women. Now the lines between people don't see as well defined. Do you feel that women should be able to find their liveliness by surrender to, you know, this whole concept of youth and being able to have younger lovers?
Well, I believe in soul connections. You know, I'm not so much an ageist. So I think whatever age that person comes in, yeah, if you connect, yeah, if the heart's there, if you find love, sure. I mean, if they're older, younger, same age, it doesn't matter. It's the connection, surrendering to the legitimate connection that comes. You know, and there's such a stereotype about, you know, older men and younger women, like it's fine with for older men to be with younger women. That's been accepted in our culture for ages. But, you know, to have an older woman with a younger man, that's, you know, lagging behind, which is ridiculous. It's, you know, of course it's equal. And you should be able to be with whoever you want to be with, whatever age, you know, that suits you, you know, basically.
Judith Orloff, M.D., The Ecstasy of Surrender. I thank you so much for being with us. We'll be back again. Thank you, Judith.
You're welcome.
We're going to have to be going right now, my friends. If you wanted to hear today's program again, you could go to WBAI.org, or you can go to thepositivemind.com, where you'll hear a lot of archives. And you could send an email also to Armand, A-R-M-A-N-D, at thepositivemind.com. I'd love to hear from you and hear your reactions. Be back with you soon, my friends.
All the leaves are brown and the sky is gray. I went for a walk on a winter's day. I'd be safe and warm if I was in L.A. California dreaming,
stopped along the way. Well, I got down on my bended knees, and I began to pray. You know the preacher digs the call. He knows I'm gonna stay, yes, he knows, 'cause I told him so.